Thanks for tuning in, everybody. It's another week of This Week in Mormons, starting now. Here we are, another week of roundup of Mormon news, culture, and events. This Week in Mormons is the place for you to catch up on everything you need to know to live your week to the fullest. Oh, yeah. Here we are.
That was good, Jeff. That was good.
You know, I was thinking of doing some recording some promos for the show, so I figured.
Yeah, you just did it.
Yeah.
That was amazing.
It's a big deal. Hey, Al, how are you doing?
Jeff, do you ever have deja vu?
I do sometimes, especially today, right now.
Like this. We are.
We might as well let the cat out of the bag.
Deja vu-ed.
Yesterday, Al and I recorded the entire show. We were about done. We had probably had, I don't know, 2 or 3 minutes left of audio to lay down. And Al's computer took a dump, and it all went bye-bye. And we spent hours trying to recover things to no avail. So
now here we are.
So here we are again.
Show part dich.
Yeah. So it's going to be interesting.
Some things
to see.
You missed: the bow tie jokes.
Oh, the bow tie jokes.
The unicycle joke.
Oh, there was good unicycle jokes. Dang it.
I mean, you missed some golden moments.
And there's no way we can recreate that exchange. It's just
if we do, we'll pay homage. We'll give a little tip of the hat to yesterday.
Or something. Maybe if it comes up, it comes up. By the way, I like bow ties, Al, so don't make fun of them. Thank you very much.
Well, that's funny, Jeff, because I have a joke about bow ties. No.
Whatever. So the upside to today, we got some more news to talk about than we did yesterday, so there's that. But
yeah, we found a BYU memes page.
Yeah, and this whole thing about like gay marriage in California, some people talk about that. I don't know what that's all about, but we'll get to it. It'll be very exciting.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, we do have a couple.
Yeah.
A couple of good things.
But right. More importantly, how are you, sir?
Jeff, I'm tremendous. I had a big weekend, of no sleep, which you know I love.
Oh, yeah.
And I know you love.
Oh, yeah.
But that's just the way that it goes.
Have you still not slept? Because you texted me and said, no. I can't sleep. So I'm very confused about your current state of being.
No, I am I'm sleeping now.
Okay. All
right. Right now, I'm asleep. And it'll get better. I'm excited. I'm excited for days to come when everything will I'll sleep through nights. No, that's the problem with being a geek, right? My life is a series of sprints and walks. So I'll have times where I can sleep plenty. Like this week, it's been pretty much a week off since Sunday. And so I'm like sleeping in till 9, not going to bed till, you know, 2-ish.
Oh.
So I'm getting full nights of sleep. That's like 7 hours for those of you doing the math.
That is what it equals. Very good.
I'm excited. I'm very excited. But then you have other times where I work 23 hours in a day.
Now, what was this, what was the thing you did over the weekend? What was all this?
It was actually called Startup Weekend, which is a big international brand. So it's where you go sit in a room with a bunch of nerds, designers, and business guys, and you start. We started 14 companies in 54 hours. So
okay, how many of them will survive?
Well, that's not really the point of building like long sustainable businesses. The point is more getting together, networking, and building something.
And then selling it off and
couple,
letting people
couple
get
of
fired.
Really cool companies.
You are
there's a couple of really cool companies that came out of there because it's just like what it is you get up there and everybody says, I have this idea. Does anybody want to work on that? Or I have this idea. Does anybody want to work on that? Then off you go and you work and you build. It was cool because since it's in Utah, so they always do it Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Mm. But when I wanted to bring it here, I was like, you know what? We can't do it Sunday. No one's going to skip church for nerdery.
Mm.
So we did Thursday, Friday, Saturday, ended up being a smash. People took work off Friday.
Stop it.
And, you know, like, I'm pretty sure Jesus' hand of providence blessed that event because no Sunday. So Seventh-day Adventist, you can suck it. No, I'm just kidding. I can't. It's a joke. Ah. No, it was great, though. We had a lot of fun. And the Thursday, Friday, Saturday actually ended up working out really well.
Well, good. I'm glad it was a successful venture for you.
It was exciting. It's an adrenaline-filled, diabetes-inducing weekend. So,
yeah. Cool.
How was your week,
Jeff? Everything was just great. I took the Foreign Service exam over the weekend.
Oh, yeah.
So that was...
Did you know where Lake Titicaca was.
I do know where that is. It is on the border of Bolivia and Peru, but it was not.
Do you know which nation has risen the most sharply in population since 1972?
Since 1972. I wonder what that would be. I'm going to throw one out there and think it might be Nigeria.
Oh!
But, you know, I don't know.
In Asia?
In Asia, it's hard to say. They've had such a large population in the first place. Like, I bet China's actual rate of growth hasn't really exploded. So let's assume South Korea. Why not?
Wow. Wow. See, because I took the Foreign Service exam, like, oh, I don't know, right after college. So like 3 or 4 years ago, I took it. No. You know when it was? When I came back from Ukraine, when you and I went over and did our study over there.
Ah, the days.
I came back and I was like, I should be a foreign servant.
Yeah, because we saw how all those foreign service workers in the English-speaking ward lived.
They were kings.
They were living the dream. I mean, you live with a Ukrainian family and then see how the foreign service workers lived. I'm like, sheesh, people.
They're like, we'll take the whole floor. We don't want
basically, yeah. I mean, the government pays for all of it. They say, here, have this. You have a little central terrace thingy in the middle and...
Yeah, they lived the life.
Flat screen.
Well, so I came back and took it. I didn't know it was an exam that you could study for, though. I thought it was just like a... Let's see, you know, like one of those.
Are you
tests
smarter
that,
than a fifth grader, basically? Right.
Well, no, I thought it was like a test where it was just like aptitude, whether or not you could do problem solving or if you'd be a good international person. So they were like personality tests.
There's a little bit of that aspect, but then yeah, then it has many elements of like the GRE.
You can definitely study for that. You can definitely study for it.
Yes.
And there are guys that like they were there for their third time. They'd studied all year. I'm like, no, I just heard about it last week, signed up, thought, hey, maybe this would be fun.
Yeah, so it was good. And
did you win?
I think so. I think I had the highest score in all the land.
Oh, good. That's my Jeff.
That's me.
That is my Jeff.
We'll find out in a couple of weeks. So other than that, you know, just whatever stuff's.
Oh, good.
It was just a pleasant time overall, you know. Had some good church, all that stuff.
Oh, I love church.
Apparently there was a sporting contest of some type.
The bowl was super.
I believe that happened.
I watched, so...
So, there we go.
I came home and watched it alone as I quasi-slept, and then had a buddy from New York and two Aussies come over. They brought beer. It's always interesting.
Was it Falstaz?
I wish, man. Oh, I wish. But it's always interesting having, like, because it doesn't bother me at all, but it's weird having, like, your roommates come home and there's, like, bunch of beer cans stacked next to the couch, and you sit there. You're like,
I remember, probably.
Well, because and like I've never, I don't know, I'd never throw a party where beer was part of
sure,
it, right?
Sure.
These guys just showed up and brought it over, and I'm like, that's different. I've never had that.
I remember when I first moved to Provo, when I transferred to BYU, I didn't know that one of my roommates was not LDS. He was from Taiwan. He was there getting a PhD in some random thing or whatever. Anyways, so great kid. And so after the first couple of days there, it's like, I didn't know this yet. Okay, realistically, this was in like the first day, because how does that not come up? But I come home and there's like a Bud Light sitting on the table. And I was like, so it's going to be like that, huh? All right. Good deal. Welcome to BYU, Openshaw. Good for you. So it's just... funny. We also had many experiences. He was into science, and he would roast his own coffee beans with, like, electrodes and stuff, and routinely would set off our smoke alarms every single Saturday morning at, like, 7 a.m. and wake all of us up.
While roasting. Did nobody show him Safeway, where you can just go buy them in the bin?
You know, I don't know. And technically, he was supposed to live the honor code, which would mean word of wisdom, but you know, the guy's not Mormon, what am I going to say to him? You know, hey, do your thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Rami was a great guy. Great
Interesting. Like, it's just funny the scenarios we find odd as Mormon folk, because anybody else would be like, oh yeah, sure, whatever. And like for us, we're like, well, I wonder.
Anyway. Yeah. I mean, I don't care. It was just funny at first because I was like, all right, so I have roommates who drink. That's very nice.
you take it out of the fridge and put it on the table with a note that says, we need to talk.
And then I bust out all of my Mormon ads.
Start just posting them around. All of a sudden in the kitchen, there's a You're Never Alone poster staring
at you. I should get a bunch of those and just plaster them all over my house.
That's
right
the
now.
Creepiest one, by the way.
You're Never Alone?
It was a running joke in our family, because that would end up like staring back at you while you were sitting on the toilet, and we'd be like, "Who put that in here?" Because it's just Jesus staring at you. You're never alone. It's like, I need to be alone.
The only time I've done bathroom stuff was on the mission, when there would be pictures of cute girls in the conference issue of the Ensign, and the elders would cut it out and tape it on the back of the door.
You did not have a mother like mine.
Apparently not. Well, I remember what it said. One time we made one that took these. There was a picture of three cute girls, and it said, and we wrote on it like, "Do you want to marry one of us, elder? Then quit looking at us and work hard."
Oh,
that's what we'd put on our doors. They inspired
us
to be better.
Precious.
Wasn't it, though?
Mm. That's an excuse to look at pictures.
That is also very true.
Anywho.
I wore a bow tie at one point in time.
It just doesn't come back.
This weekend. I was wearing one. It was delightful. It had hot air balloons.
I don't know
on it.
How it came up. How did it come up before?
I don't know. I tried to find it, but there was no...
I think we were talking something about... Gosh, I don't know.
I know. Whatever.
You were at church in a bow tie, and I was making fun of you.
You were.
And then I said that people would rather kill you than anyone else.
Yeah, basically. And something about unicycles.
Ugh! So frustrating.
So frustrating.
Anyway, how about this Mormon stuff?
So, Mormon stuff. Let's press, just dump right in. Good old McKay Coppins. Yay for McKay.
Yay, McKay.
Though I'll give McKay credit, despite his weird BuzzFeed-ness, whatever that's all about.
I still hate McKay.
I don't get BuzzFeed at all. But the fun thing about it is he sometimes talks about topics that no one else is really going to think about, because he is an LDS journalist. And so this is a whole article called Mitt's Mormon Army, How It Works. And it's a...
Can we just call that Mitt's Marmy?
Yeah. I like it. And so basically talking about LDS church communications apparatus, and how that's been used in the past for politics, things of that nature, and whether that's cool or not. Because we've all experienced this, I imagine, to some degree or another. Of course, we have the ward lists that are supposed to be for ward use only, but how often do members breach that and
often
talk about all sorts of... I mean, I don't know. I mean, you've ever seen this, Al?
The abuse coming into lists?
Sure, yeah.
Well, yeah, especially out here, people target members of the church specifically because of the network that it brings, right? For like MLMs and business things. I mean, it's the idea that because it's for Mormons mainly, this is our only social outlet. I think a lot of times the line gets blurred, right? I mean, if you were a part of the Lions Club and part of the Rotary Club and had part of the union at work and then part of the church as well, when you need to share that, little Jimmy's selling candy bars to go to scout camp, you don't have just the church to offer it to. You can go and offer it to some of these other social outlets that you have, and then it's not like you don't feel the pressure to put everything through the church.
Right.
Well, what happens instead is we have no other outlets. Most, a lot of people, which I think is a problem. I think people need to be more involved in the community. And actually, I think the church needs to strike a balance between activities during the week and that kind of thing, so that we have more opportunity to go out and branch out a little bit. I don't know. That's a random thought. Maybe we can talk about that. But
with politics,
if we had more social outlets, then we wouldn't have to funnel everything through here.
Yeah. But it's frustrating, though. Outlets is one thing, but, it's frustrating when you see it used for political gain. And I know I've gotten, random emails from people in the ward who've clearly used...
Oh, they just assume. They just... You're Mormon? Mitt's Mormon? You need this.
Exactly. And or with Mormon, with Romney, or with Prop 8, for example. I saw a lot of that. And the thing is that a lot of these are well-intentioned but naive or oblivious members of the church who just assume of course you want this sign in your lawn. So they don't even ask, and they go and put it down.
Weren't you telling me your mom just had people come show up and drop a Romney sign in there?
Stuff's happened before.
Poop's happened. Yeah.
So it's frustrating to see, because I wish we could get out of this mindset of that this is okay to do. But at the same time, I mean, like, I always think of this for politics, right? But like you were saying, for socialization and stuff like that, like, you know, when I saw those word lists as a young man, the printouts in that one font the church always used that you had on the mission and stuff.
Comic Sans?
Whatever it was. And, you know, it would say for church use only. And so when I was younger, I'd freak out. Like, does this mean I can't use it for anything else unless I'm calling somebody specifically for my calling? Like, can I not call the so-and-so family because I want to talk to their daughter because I want to ask her out? Like, is that out of bounds? Is that what they're saying?
I think so. I don't think that the word list should be used for any of that stuff.
But then what about nowadays when instead you use your LDS.org login? And of course you might use it to look somebody up. I mean, come on.
I don't. Last time I was in that LDS.org login was when I was in college. And then last week when I had to do the family history class because they had cookies.
I should probably take one of those because I've never done my own names in the temple.
No, you know, it was
interesting. And I want to learn how to do that.
My mom and dad are uber genealogy people, and my grandma is like a certified genealogist, and I jumped in there and I wasn't connected to anybody. Then I connected like in the new.familysearch.org, and then where it's like building out, it's connecting everyone in a big pedigree. And so like I went and connected myself, and then my grandma on my dad's side.
What do you do after you? I mean, I don't want to get too sidetracked here, but what do you do when you find names, but how do you print them up and get the little blue and pink cards?
Oh, how do you submit them for temple work?
Yeah, to whom do you submit?
No, so the way it works, and I actually...
It's appalling how little I know about this. I mean, really.
I haven't done this in a while, but you submit them to a specific temple, and then they'll print them out for you.
Huh, okay.
From what I understand. Or, like, your family history center.
They can do
can
it.
Can also print
oh,
them.
Oh, okay. That's what I figured. Cool. So, anyway, so the ward list stuff, I... Don't do it, people. Resist the urge. But my other gripe with this, and this is more of a fact-checking sort of thing, but I expect more from McKay because he is Mormon, so at the same time should know better about some things. After using various examples of how the ward apparatus is used, what he uses the most to illustrate this point are the listservs. For those of you who don't know what these are, they are popular around areas with large young single adult populations for the most part. They're basically a Craigslist for... the Mormon kids there, really. I mean, that's the best way to look at it. And a number of things on there. Now, for example, on the listserv in D.C. recently, there was stuff put on there to get the bus of supporters to go down to South Carolina, go visit with Mitt Romney. McKay mentions this, but he also erroneously calls the listserv the Colonial First Ward listserv, which serves more than 3,500 D.C. area Mormons. It's not even called that. It's called the Colonial. It serves everybody. But namely, it irks me that he's roping in the listserv as if it's part of the church apparatus. I mean, he says right here, you know, that a highly motivated base of Mormon supporters has effectively taken advantage of the LDS infrastructure to help Romney. And then he goes on to say that one of the most illustrative examples is the listserv. But the listserv is not LDS infrastructure. It's for Mormons, but it's not by the church.
Isn't it kind of blurred, though? I mean, it's...
A little bit, but it's not by the church. I mean, to say that it's egregious to use... To talk a lot about how ward lists and stuff like that and how that's dodgy and people use them and they shouldn't and then use the listserv as more of a supporting evidence, I don't think that works.
Yeah. No, I'd agree
from
with that.
From a technical standpoint.
It'd be a bigger problem if people took the list and subscribed to everyone without their...
Right, yeah.
...knowing to the Romney campaign newsletter, right?
Well, yeah, that'd be a huge thing. And, you know, the listserv has its own rules about politics and stuff like that, but it is a separate volunteer thing that has... Salt Lake has nothing to do with it at all. It's just done by locals for locals, and that's good.
You remember back in the day when we all had kind of our ad hoc websites and things like that for the different church... Like, every church unit would just be like, yeah, we made a website, so go check this out. We have our blog, go check this out. And then the church came down and was like, shut those down.
Yeah, and it's funny that we talk about that, because just this past Sunday in my ward council, our bishop brought up, like, hey, does anyone know, he was clearly leading into an instructive moment, but he's like, who knows what the church's policy is regarding websites and stuff. And initially, everyone's like, that we can't do it, that, you know, you have to use like the official church one, and they frown upon whatever else. And he was like, yeah, kind of, but no, really not. And actually, our bishop basically said this Sunday, he's like, I want a Facebook page. I want us out there on social media. I want us using every channel, which is a huge 180 from what I've seen in recent years when the church... He's made a point to say they are unofficial means of communication, but...
Well, man, Facebook, for every ward I've been to, Facebook is a huge part of like just staying in
really?
Touch.
Because I've been in others where I thought it's useful, but then the bishop was really uncomfortable with like ward announcements going on Facebook, pictures of events being on Facebook, and tried to like shut it all down and say, no, we need to do this all via the ward website and our LDS.org logins. Because I understand the church doesn't want... I understand the church cares about its image and probably doesn't want unofficial, unsanctioned ward things somehow possibly representing those wards and people who don't know getting the wrong idea.
What's bizarre to me is I feel like if a bunch of people saw a ton of pictures of Mormon folks out playing ice hockey, right, like and drinking hot chocolate, that there's no way possible that could like hurt the image of the church.
I agree, especially
the image that people have of us of being horn-wearing polygamists.
Yeah. So anyway, so I mean, I agree with you in essence, but I get why. The church does...
Freaking...
Anyway, we've been on this for way too long.
McKay Coppins.
Yes. Freaking McKay. Learn how to write, sir. And please forward my article to the Deseret News. Yes, what?
I'm going right into Romanian IMF representatives. So the IMF mission chief to Romania...
You love this story.
...gets invited out there. The guy looks... He's a great-looking guy. Very jowly. A very jowly man. Jeffrey Franks, the head of the IMF mission to Romania, gets invited out to Romania, and they say, "Hey, Jeff, why don't you come up to our mountain cabin with us?" He says, "Sure." They go up there. It's a beer fest, a party.
What?
With women... Women, booze, and
such.
And liquor, and other booze, and licorice, I'm sure. And so then they get up there, and everybody says, whoa, this is indulgence. You're just publicly going after drinking, dancing. You're being insensitive to the pain and suffering that the IMF is causing our country, and all you do is dance. And he responds and says, "I was invited to a traditional dinner where I got the chance to taste traditional Romanian food. Its purpose was better know the culture. I am a Mormon. I don't drink, I don't smoke, I don't drink coffee, and I can't afford anything immoral," which he doesn't know that it's much cheaper in Romania than it is in the States. "But I cannot afford anything immoral. My conscience is clear." I love that he's like, I love that he's just tossing that out in a press conference. We're like, "Listen, I'm a Mormon guy. You can't accuse me of this stuff." It reminds me of when Sean Bradley, he had like one of the really foul mouths on the basketball court, and people would bring it up, and he'd be like, "I'm a Mormon. I didn't say that, ref." And the ref would be like, "I'm a Catholic. I don't lie. You were swearing." So. Sometimes it gets bad to be, Mormon. It's one of those where you're like, "I'm Mormon, I couldn't do anything wrong." You're like, BS. But other times, it's kind of cool to just work it in. Just be like, "Hey, listen, in case you're thinking anything funny's going on, I got priorities."
Word. And he is helping the work in the process.
I don't know that he's doing any of that by going up to dirty, boozing dancing halls and spending the weekend doing that instead of working out Romania's IMF issues, but... I like that he's a jowly man. I'm sure from Utah, 100%.
Could he go jowl to jowl with Jeffrey R. Holland?
His two jowls would make up one jowl.
I mean, is he that jowly? That's what.
No, he's no bulldog yet, but like he's got the chops. He's growing into him.
You think of Elder Holland as a bulldog? I think of him with those baleful eyes like a basset hound. He just seems like we're borderline breaking his heart all the time.
He kind of does.
Which I don't mind because I like his sense
of truth. He does have like he's that look of a father that you're like, "I'm so sorry, Dad. I'll never do it again. I'm sorry." He's that guy.
Okay. All right. Hey, so we should throw something in there that surely merits discussion. So yesterday, Prop 8 ruled unconstitutional.
Now, all right, break that down for me, Jeff.
Well, see, these people in California voted to, protect marriage, as they say. And the federal appeals panel yesterday ruled that Proposition 8 is unconstitutional because it Well, here, I can read the actual remark here, the statement. It says, Proposition 8 serves no purpose and has no effect other than to lessen the status and human dignity of gays and lesbians in California and to officially reclassify their relationships and families as inferior to those of opposite sex couples. So, but the one thing I'm saying is it didn't address whether everyone should have the same sex right to marry, like especially at a federal level, and it talked more about how the state still has to should like honor marriages that already exist. It's a little fuzzy, but as you might imagine, this blew up all over the.
Well, the church responds, right?
The church does respond. Yeah, I can.
They respond. They say the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints regrets today's decision. California voters have twice determined in general election that marriage should be recognized as only between a man and a woman. We have always held that view. Courts should not alter that definition, especially when the people of California have spoken so clearly on the subject. And then they have a few more paragraphs.
Actually, I think the supporting paragraphs, especially the last one, are kind of interesting.
They say, we recognize that this decision represents a continuation of what has been a vigorous public debate over the rights of the people to define and protect the fundamental institution of marriage. There is no doubt that today's ruling will intensify the debate in this country. We urge people on all sides of this issue to act in a spirit of mutual respect and civility towards those with a different opinion.
Yeah. I think the church is definitely backing off from the bold rhetoric.
Well, I think kind of what we alluded to before, where maybe, you know, maybe they realize that this, like, it's not that they're biting their tongue, but like, when you see a nation kind of going down a path and you try and stop them, right? Like, we haven't been bashful about making efforts to say, this is the wrong move for society. This is a bad idea. You don't want to be here. And now, like, and we, you know, we've been up on the wall shouting, and now we're just like, all right, if you're not going to listen, you're not going to listen. You know, we're not going to, you know, we'll
Samuel the Lamanite is just getting off the wall at this point a little bit, basically.
Like people know our stance, right? Everybody knows the stance of the Mormon Church regarding this stuff, and we know we're not bashful about it. I don't think that we've like given up.
No, I don't think we've given up, but we are. I think we are taking
smarter about it.
Sorry, yeah, a new approach. I think we're taking a little bit less of a bombastic approach to it, perhaps. And the funny thing is, when I saw this go yesterday, now I'm about to say, do not interpret this to mean that I am delighted with the decision from yesterday or anything like that. And the problem is, people interpret a genuine analysis of something as if it means I must have hated Prop 8. I don't. But I saw so much stuff on Facebook about how people saying, like, so for those of you who are against Prop 8, that must mean you support polygamy. And I'm like, that's a little bit of a non-causal relationship there, okay. Or how everyone's angry and saying that the that we don't live in a democracy anymore because 52% of the people voted yes on this, and here it's being overturned.
Well, how do you respond to that?
Well, it's very simple. Like, I'm not saying this is a perfect case of this being just, but the whole point of our Constitution is to protect everyone from the majority. That's the whole reason we have a system of checks and balances in the United States government. It's to prevent one group who can push through majorities of legislation regardless of its constitutionality, push it through and say, who cares? We're the majority and this is what we've decided. And a lot of people who have backed Prop 8 and who have kind of spit on those who were against it have said, look, the majority voted. This is how it is. Just because a majority votes on something doesn't mean that it's okay from a constitutional standpoint. I mean, this is a drastic example, but in theory, like, what if everyone voted to say that murder was totally okay? You know, and the majority decides we're okay with it. It's cool. Eye for an eye, right? You know? But the Constitution would say otherwise, and that's the reason we have it. And that's the reason, ideally, we have a judicial system.
So the idea is that the Supreme Court found it unconstitutional.
They're saying, yes, you might have passed this, but it doesn't matter that you passed it because this isn't the Supreme Court, mind you, but they said
the California Supreme Court was the one that overturned it,
yeah,
didn't they?
Well, initially, then it went to an appeals court. So this is a,
okay.
And, but yeah, they're basically saying, hey, you might have passed this, but if you look at it with the way the laws protect people, it's violating that, according to them. So that's why.
Well, I think that's important to remember. It's not that the court decided that they liked gay marriage better than straight marriage. It's that they feel like they found the Constitution to be interpreted in a different or in a way that this would go against.
Right, and we can make a lot of arguments about California's liberal court system and blah blah blah, which is ironic actually because California's Supreme Court is stacked with Republicans typically. So before you start hashing that one out, think about the makeup of the court. So it'll be interesting to see. Really, this there's a really fair chance this might get appealed to the U.S. Supreme Court, at which point we will actually have a potentially landmark decision on our hands. So that could be.
You think they'd take it?
I don't know. I think they might push it off to the, one of the appeals courts at first, one of the federal ones, but
try not to have to make a ruling.
I don't know. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens. So even if we support Prop 8 as a people, this is part of the process, and we can't take the attitude that just because the majority said yes on something means that it is automatically okay. Because it's not always. Not always.
Well, I think the church said it well. Right? They're like, we regret this. We feel like the people have made their decision. We wish it weren't still being rehashed and pulled into debate. But so, does this change anything in the for the immediate now? Like, can people get married in California?
I don't think couples? Not yet. No, I don't think so. Okay. There will be injunctions. Also, as a side note, what's with the picture on the article from KSL that has the church's statement regarding it? Look at that picture of Temple Square. Are you seeing it? How old is this photo? Why would they post this as their photo? There's no conference center. There's no round fountain to the right. There's no church-owned State Street or Main Street.
That's true.
What a weird choice, man. Why would they, like, why? Whatever. That's just, I just noticed that right now. I'm like, what the what? It's like the old gym is still there. That picture's from 1995 or something like that. So, anyway. All right, pressing right along. So, Prop 8, stay tuned, everybody.
This is interesting, too, though, because this is kind of a chance for us to practice what we preach around, you know, like the gay, kind of the gay hate speech. That we've seen come out, right? This is an opportunity for us to really be civil and conduct ourselves in a smart fashion of like this isn't it doesn't give us license to be ignorant and mean and angry. You know, this is our judicial system at work. It's not like I don't know. I see the same stuff coming through Facebook that you do, and part of me, you know, half the time is just like, come on, guys. Don't do this. Anyway, other news.
Yeah, we got to power through.
Joanna Brooks.
Oh, she's done well this week.
Rocking in CNN. She had her own little profile go on. They did a like fairly good size little write-up on her.
And it was on, I think she was on TV as well or something. But yeah, CNN did a major profile of her this week.
Now we love Joanna Brooks, and I think the reason why we love Joanna Brooks is because she's very well, and like, you go back, I don't know, when we started this show, she was still just some random blogger.
Yeah, she
right?
was like a Times and Seasons blogger, and that was it.
Late 2009, no offense, she began Seasons. Writing about Mormonism and for like other places and had pieces published. So this has been like the last 2 years that she's really kind of come up, and I think what draws people to her is that she is unabashedly tackling like things that are difficult for Mormons to discuss sometimes.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Like we tend to shy away from anything that other people don't know and understand. For instance, McKay Coppins, when he wrote about the garments, right? We turned to that and we were like, finally, somebody took the time to write down a coherent piece on garments.
Yeah, instead of just suffering through a bunch of magic underwear comments, you know? So.
Yeah. Well, so that's Joanna Brooks in a nutshell. I feel like she. You know, there's things that she doesn't necessarily like or understand about our faith. It doesn't shake her faith, but she has no problem writing about, you know, how she's come to grips with it or other aspects of our faith that maybe, you know, we believe, but, you know, like they're not generally understood. She'll tackle those. And so I think people have started to kind of resonate with her writing just in the fact that there's a real person. I mean, she doesn't come from the ideal Mormon home. Her husband's not LDS. Still like out there doing the things that she's supposed to do and writing good pieces. I don't know. I think she's helping the church.
No, I think she is. And it's been interesting to see how she's become a very much a go-to person for the media for comments and stuff, even though she's not an official church spokesperson.
Because she'll give real sound bites. Yeah. I feel
she'll
like.
Give real answers, but I like this in general because that's not to say that we don't get real sound bites from Salt Lake, because I think that Michael Otterson has done a wonderful job doing PR stuff for the church.
But that's from the church.
It is from the church. So it's really good to see Joanna Brooks. And yeah, her past has something to do with it. I mean, she was raised LDS, but she was out of the church for 10 some odd years. And she's married to a non-member. She's the department head at San Diego State. She's an avid Obama supporter. So it's she's out of the typical mold, and yet she is a believer and has come back and is faithful to that. And I think her point of view is
very
is
cool
useful.
To see her get her moment.
She's earned it. Yeah, I mean, it's amazing how in the thick of things she is now. So
yeah,
good for her. Also, Mayor Michael Bloomberg of New York City, I think he kind of hates the church or something.
He takes aim at church over guns.
Takes aim indeed.
That was great. That was great, Jeff.
Thank you. Ka-ching. So basically what this comes out to is that KSL.com, which has an online sales board or whatever, you know, for stuff. Apparently KSL is like the nation's third largest arms dealer, effectively.
It's just a classifieds place, but Utah.
That's
is
the
a
word
bunch
I was looking for.
Gun toters.
Classifieds. And so KSL classifieds, but its gun portal is huge nationwide. And because of this, Michael Bloomberg of New York is calling on the church to do a better job when it comes to gun control because they don't do anything because KSL just does its thing.
This is interesting because the church owns a lot of stuff, and I wonder how much license they really give to just be like do they go to KSL and they're like, knock yourself out, you're an NBC affiliate, show whatever you want, blah blah blah, you know, on your classifieds, if you have missed encounters, you know, go ahead, that's fine, we don't care. Or are there people that are like, you can't do that, you're a church-owned station?
Right. I guess that people take issue with the unregulated nature. Usually with gun sites and stuff, you have to register and confirm accounts and do a lot of typical things. KSL is just kind of like, it's very anonymous. It's like Craigslist-esque when it comes to the way
they
do it.
Well, no, it's like a news board, which is what they've tried, or an ad board, which is what they've tried to make it. And you know, they're not promoting necessarily the guns on there, but people can go on there and say, hey, I've got this for sale. Anybody want it?
So the question is, how much does the church really have a responsibility on this? I mean, yes, the church owns KSL, but I don't imagine much of day-to-day KSL stuff makes it up to...
Well, the mayor's investigation found 8 of 10 people that were trying, like shady guys that shouldn't have been sold guns, were sold guns through there.
Yes, that's a
problem. So obviously a problem, right? Like, the fact that any shady dude can get a gun in Salt Lake, but I don't know. I think the church probably should take. Well,
I mean, the church could do it. I just don't know. Is this falling on the church? Because I just don't see something like KSL.
Should they have gone to Burger King and said, "Hey, we own stock. I don't want that creepy king running around snatching burgers."
That's why the king is gone now. So, but you raise a good point because the church owns a lot of things that might not be in line. I'm not to say that owning a gun is not in line with the gospel, but I think we could safely say that reckless, unchecked gun ownership to those who should not have one is a problem. But the church, KSL also is the NBC affiliate. KSL will show programs like 30 Rock and The Office, and you could say much of the content of those shows.
They are wonderful.
Isn't I love them, but you could say it's not in line with the gospel, right? And yet there the church is owning it and turning a profit from it. So really, like, how much day-to-day stuff is coming down from the boys? I don't imagine a lot.
I don't know. And I'm curious how if they'll respond even to Mayor Bloomberg. Well, it's interesting that he singles out the church, right? Like, why not call on KSL to fix their issue?
I know, yeah. That's the one thing that kind of bothers me, because you can say, just, hey, KSL, fix this. Then you don't, like, need to say, hey, church, do it. Because, like, for example, what's a random company that's majority owned by somebody you don't even think about? What if, like, you know, if Redbox is having issues, for example, yeah. People will say, hey, Redbox, fix this. They're not going to go say Coinstar, the evil conglomerate that owns Redbox, blah, 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 you know, so.
It's true.
Coinstar owns Redbox. I had no idea until recently.
Did I tell you that?
No, I read it. I was reading the news and I was, because Coinstar yeah, bought, coin, Coinstar just bought,
Coinstar,
they just bought all the Blockbuster kiosk things.
Yeah, you look at Coinstar and you're like, there's a company going nowhere. And then you're like, oh, wait, you've got some great holdings.
Yeah, Redbox is a genius business
model.
Warren
Buffett calls them one of the most underrated stocks.
Yeah, go figure. So
so a couple tech updates for the church.
Yeah,
this is interesting. So I had a discussion with a couple of the tech guys from the church. They're developing heavy in Android, actually.
About time. Yeah, they've been, Jeff, you can, I can tell as an Android user, they've been
catching
up.
But like they have, people that are, you know, like security breaches and stuff that are being waged against them, like attacks and stuff. They've got a lot of people that are like they've got legitimate problems with people trying to spy on the work that they're doing, things like that. I guess there's a lot of drama around that. Like the church is one of the leaders in that space of what they're putting together. And they've got a bunch of stuff they're working on they can't talk to me about, obviously. But like it's interesting to see how the church is starting to be, you know, adopt being a leader in the technology space, whereas before they're like, no, we wait 10 years and then we use the technology and that's the safest way. Old modems that dial out and transfer at 2200 baud are the only solution we'll ever use because they're safe.
Right.
Well, you know, we've started to adopt and adapt. So now they're adding MLS functionality to LDS.org, which MLS is the back office system that the church uses for like
everything,
you know, track
records,
yeah, track teaching,
tithing submissions every week, all that stuff. So
they're starting to add some of that stuff to, you know, where maybe you can run reports if you're an elders quorum leader or something. Right to LDS.org, which I think would be great.
And it's great because you read the little release about it, and the main point behind this is they realize that because clerics have had to do everything at the building, they don't want to have to travel a lot back and forth during the week. So they're spending their Sundays doing all of their administrative work, and obviously the church is trying to get us to avoid having too many meetings on Sundays, and so a big push behind that is just to make it so they can work at home if it works better for them. So.
Well, so they're making strides. Like the last real innovative thing that I've seen the church do was the temple names, right? When you go in, they scan your
oh,
name
right.
your recommend at the temple, right? That was the last big technology.
And they said that was, as a quick aside, I mean, because they say that was for security reasons, you know, to really make, because they had people, you know, with old recommends going in and causing uh-huh. problems and stuff. But do you think they also track us?
Oh, for sure. I think having actual stats around temple attendance is a huge thing, especially for like, you know, what areas need more temples and how temples are being used. The other thing that's interesting is they said they were going to do thumbprints, like fingerprints initially.
Wow.
But old people's fingerprints didn't read well. They're like, so that didn't work for our demo.
It's not so much. So anyway. Oh, also, and one beneath that, there's also a new lesson schedules application in beta via your LDS.org login. Because it lets you just, instead of having to do what I do in mine, you know, like a shared Google Doc showing lessons for Elders Quorum, you can actually set it all up via your login.
Wait, so you can go in there and say, we're not going to teach this lesson this week. We're going to teach this one.
I mean, I haven't messed with it or anything, but it looks like you can select, you know, whatever you're doing, whatever class, course, this and that, and I assume you can assign people and names and who's doing what. So you can organize your lesson schedules on LDS.org.
Oh, this is for like an Elders Quorum president or something.
I would assume so, but I haven't messed with it at all, so I don't know. But I like it. It's cool. It's been great to see what the church has done.
A few other updates. We got... Mom, I'm Dating a Mormon starts. Those guys.
Oh,
remember that?
Did you watch it?
I watched half of it. It's
only half of 3 minutes.
Yeah. I got distracted.
It was like more of another promotional video than...
I expected them to try or like to do more, yeah.
An episode.
Didn't it? It was supposed to start a week ago.
That was when they posted it, on the 31st, which was the date it was supposed to start.
We should email those guys.
We should. I also wonder, isn't Rich a little bit... too old to be ice blocking in front of Rock Canyon at this stage?
Hey man, that
in his life,
that guy knows how to find that low hanging fruit.
I mean, if they are trying to give this poor girl Jasmine a real rundown of Mormon cliches, I guess they, you know, I hope they went to the malt house. What the heck is that place called? I can't think of it.
The Malt House?
No, what's the one called? It's
the
on.
Malt Shop.
Is it the Malt Shop? The one on University just north of Bulldog. You know, the one.
Malt Shop.
Malt
yeah.
Shop. Thank you. Gosh.
And they probably played Signs. So a girlfriend of mine sends me an article from LDS Living, which I always forget LDS Living exists until I get there.
It's
and then
terrible.
They have ads for vasectomy reversals and things like that.
Oh, I love it.
Vasectomy reversals and cookies are their two advertisers.
It's going to be who we have advertising.
It's an add-on, or it's a little article on He's Amazing and Still Single Why. And she sent it to me referring to herself as to why she fails in relationships. And I read it and saw in myself reasons why I still fail in relationships. Sent it to Jeff. And Jeff read it and saw, well, Jeff is perfect.
Very little. I choose to believe it's the women's fault.
But we'll just give you the headlines. I think it's an interesting article. It's certainly something that should be, you know, I think we should be cognizant of. Because as a whole, I think the church demo is getting older and single.
Agreed.
You know, we're not getting married necessarily at 21, 22. There's a bunch of us that are moving up. So the headlines are, first, these men suffer from excessive pressure caused by a common form of anxiety. So pressure from themselves or their family thinking that they should meet the perfect person, or other women coming into
it's
this.
Anticipatory anxiety is what it's called.
Which is interesting. I mean, the fact that we might say no to a relationship because we think that our family wouldn't like them, or that we wouldn't be the right husband for them, or whatever it is, right? That could shake us. The other is, many of the women that we date inadvertently add even more pressure.
Yeah, wenches.
Yes. So like their expectations and pressures of what they're looking for, because women are looking for that perfect match as well. And so they build it up in their head, and that may cause us to shy away, or vice versa, right? Like women to men and men to women. Third, when it comes to dating, these men feel spiritually disconnected from God. The idea here being that we're looking for that sign. And so when God isn't necessarily coming in and saying, this is it, then we get shaken and run, where we know that, like, God kind of leaves it. You know, I always go back to the Bruce R. McConkie quote of, like, the one, well, I guess I probably could have prayed about it. That would have helped. But I just found a girl I liked and I married her.
Yep.
I'm like, if Bruce R. is pulling that mojo, then, you know, like, the fact that we're wandering around Temple Square waiting for God to give us that warm and fuzzy feeling. We know we're supposed to get married. We know we're supposed to do that. Why are we waiting for some random, you know, like, extra affirmation when we can work it out?
Right.
Like, I mean, it's kind of like the sacrament prayers. One of my big pet peeves with sacrament prayers is we add things to the ordinance and almost in a pharisaical nature, like, we just toss stuff in there that doesn't need to be there, right? One of those being the glance back at the bishop. That's not in any handbook anywhere that you're supposed to glance back at the bishop, wait for him to nod before you get up and go on. Everybody does it, right? This is an ordinance that's been laid out exactly how it's supposed to be done. We know how it's supposed to be done, and yet we, like, work little things in there, and then when people don't do it, we think it's odd. Well,
yeah, but I think the glance back is just verification, just because some bishops.
No, fact is, if you do it wrong, the bishop will get your attention. He's very good at getting your attention, right?
That's true.
And so, like, if you do something wrong, he'll come and get you. He'll come and tap you on the shoulder and say, "Hey, we need to actually do it like this." And then you do it over. There's no reason to, like, especially when all the attention is on the sacrament table, on the, you know, symbols of Christ. Why throw a glance and, like, distract back? Just do it the way you're supposed to do it. And if the bishop needs you, he'll get you. Well, I think the same goes for relationships. Just do what you're supposed to do. If God needs your attention, like, if you're marrying a psycho that's got a gun under the closet, he'll get your attention. He'll say, whoa, whoa, whoa.
Because that is what we need to be concerned about. Not that if we're compatible and if we'll work out.
If your woman buys a gun on KSL, or if they're, like, crazy random
Republicans,
mentally unstable and going to murder your mother, that's also a problem. Like, God knows this stuff, and he'll... Like, if he needs to get our attention, he'll get our attention. So be cognizant of that, but, like, don't be glancing back every moment.
Yeah, don't be Lot's wife.
That's right.
Yeah. It's a good read, and really we only highlighted the paragraph headings, but there's some really good information.
That's a worthwhile
within those
read.
Paragraphs. It's a worthwhile read. Unlike the one in the Deseret News, "Never Been on a Date? LDS Singles Experiences Provide Tips and Skills." Yeah. Ugh. Some Gomer did this, like, dating survey. Which is,
he found UVU students 16%
had not been dated ever.
Dude, at church they did a spotlight on meet members of your ward. They were like, favorite date, and she said, ? Bowling? ? I've never been asked out.
Wow,
it was the saddest thing. I'm like, oh,
I'm gonna be a jerky guy right now. Do you feel that 16% might somehow also be in line with the obesity rate of UVU students?
Boo, Jeff.
Just saying.
Boo, Jeff.
Look, you want straight talk. We'll give you straight talk.
That reminds me of when we had We had a member of the 70 come to BYU and give a devotional, and he got into marriage. He was like, listen, if you're fat, you should work out with a little, lose some weight. Maybe you'll be more dateable.
I mean, there's some truth to that.
That's a quote. That is a quote from 70.
I mean, there's a fine line. We need to learn to be happy with ourselves. But at the same time, if we're not like in shape and we're not appealing to the opposite sex, and this goes both ways, then it doesn't hurt to...
Well, yeah, every fat guy I know that like bemoans the fact that he's single, I'm like, let's start just moving and jogging and working out.
And because that begets more confidence. And when you work out and you look better, you feel better and you act more confident about it, and then
being,
you're more attractive.
Being big isn't bad, right? Like as long as you can be big and active, being lazy and, you know, never leaving your couch, that's bad.
Yeah, but it's harder on women, because as men we can generally get away, I think, with being more padded. It's just the way our society works, but it sucks for women, because honestly, I mean, think about it. Yeah, it's hard. True. You don't look at a woman who might have the same body type as a man who's a little round, and let her get a
You
free
and I
pass.
Both have friends that aren't like petite that we think are attractive, right? Like that are a little
true.
Better size. But the thing about it is they're active, like they're out
yeah,
moving.
Right,
so
right.
I don't know how we got on this topic. We're wasting
But
time.
I like it. Also, the first sentence is wonderful. For LDS singles, going out on a first date is a rite of passage. Doesn't that apply to everybody?
For every
isn't everyone's first date a big deal?
Boy.
John J. Hammond, you have a PhD in family studies from BYU. You should know better.
You fool.
You're fired.
Let's go some quick mentions. Bill Mayer
is a jerk.
Unbaptized
a total
Mitt
jerk.
Romney's dad.
Yeah, he unbaptized Mitt Romney's father, dead father-in-law.
Just as like mocking.
Like said, I unbaptize you. Ah. Also of note, some quick temple updates. Okay, some quick things. So I didn't even realize this. They're doing excavations now at the old Provo Tabernacle. It's actually been named. I don't know how we missed this. So it's going to be called the Provo City Center Temple.
I love it.
It will not be the Provo Los Hermanos Utah Temple, which is much to my chagrin, but it will be the Provo City Center Temple.
What's the chicken place in Breaking Bad?
Oh, is it Los Pollos Hermanos or something like that?
Oh, yeah, the Chicken Brothers. I'll pause that, Miles. All right.
Side note, Breaking Bad is pretty much the greatest show to ever be on television.
Don't watch it, though. It's terrible. It's, you'll be offended.
At times, yeah. It's got some shady stuff in there. But let's see.
Dude, like the first season, too, there's like some really random sex things they work in.
Yeah, I agree. It's like how...
We don't recommend it.
No.
We have to come out as Twim and say that we don't recommend you watch
Nor
it.
Nor does the church, but we're not responsible for what you do in your private life. The Connecticut Temple, the Hartford, Connecticut one, is going to be approved to be in the city of Farmington. Yeehaw!
Yay!
And some other quick updates here. Let's see. So they've been doing the work in Provo, and they're doing actual archaeological excavations right now. So I don't know if they've found Indian ruins or something.
There's some archaeologist graduate student that's just ecstatic that they get
so
to play
thrilled.
In Provo.
And then a side note, just a lot of stuff's been going on. The Gilbert Temple's really picking up speed. They've got a lot of the concrete panels, the siding showing up, the same facings being put on the Calgary Temple, and basement walls are going up for the Phoenix Temple.
Exciting stuff.
A lot of things going on in the Mountain West right now.
It's been an exciting little week for Mormondom.
Hey, what was this contest that we had before?
Oh, the create.lds.org is looking... I think this is interesting. This is their community effort to like gather video and stuff like that. They're hosting a contest about something.
Oh, okay.
Not a big deal. I just
you
tossed
it
up
there. Love it.
It's true.
Well, I guess anyway. So, folks, we would appreciate it if you would share with us your thoughts on this episode over at thisweekinmormons.com. You can leave your comments using our commenting engine, Intense Debate. Everyone needed to know all that. And also shoot us.
And facebook.com/thisweekinmormons, twitter.com/@therealtwin.
And contact@thisweekinmormons.com. Of course, you can find us on YouTube if you want to see various videos, mostly Sunday School Bonanza at Twee Mormons. Maybe we should change that. And also, we encourage you to listen to Sunday School Bonanza, our other podcast, 10-Minute Gospel Doctrine Preparation, so you can go in there prepared and ready to hit it.
I'm a Sunday school teacher now. I expect all of you to listen to this.
It's been good. I've been getting good feedback from people, and I really appreciate that. So, and as always,
excellent.
We appreciate you taking the time to sit with us and spend an hour with us chatting away.
All right. Have a great week, Jeff.
Thank you. I'm going to go put on my bow tie.
I wish I had.
I'm going to ride a unicycle, and I'm going to go down the street, and I'm forced to hit somebody. I'm going to kill the guy in the bow tie.
It's true. It's true.
I'm going to do all of it. Bow tie.
And we missed it. Anyway, all right, have a good week, buddy.
Thanks, buddy. Talk to you later. Everyone, thanks for listening to This Week in Mormons. We certainly appreciate it, and tell your friends. Share. Goodbye.
The lazy way they turn your head into a rest stop for the dead, and it all in gold and blue and gray. The efforts to allay your dread, in spite of all you knew and said, were hard to see and harder still to say. A comfort blush, a lasting lead, was sent to quell your sentiment and keep your trembling scent, your hand at bay. And when a sudden silhouette escaped the top side of your bed, I knew you'd never end.